Our next presenter is Kelsey Gilmet. Kelsey graduated from Kalamazoo College with a Bachelor's of Arts degree in Human Development and Social Relations. Kelsey returned to school to pursue a master's degree in nursing, which she received from the University of Minnesota. Kelsey is currently a doctoral candidate. Can you believe all of the overachievers on this panel? You're so lucky this morning. Kelsey is currently a doctoral candidate in the Department of Community Health Sciences at the University of Illinois Chicago School of Public Health. She also works with the Mid-America Center for Public Health Practice as part of the evaluation team on a grant entitled Communities Putting Prevention to Work. Kelsey has specific research interests in program evaluation, qualitative research methods, and adolescent violence prevention. It's my privilege to introduce you to Kelsey.
Good morning. So I am going to switch focus a little bit from rural communities and talk about suburban Cook County, Illinois. The title of my presentation is long, probably too long as they all are, but I'm going to talk about evaluating the contributors to policy systems and environmental change among model communities in suburban Cook County, Illinois. Unfortunately, I was not paid a ton of money to be here today, so I have no financial relationships to disclose. So this is a map of suburban Cook County. I don't know how many of you are familiar with it, but it is a large and geopolitically diverse and complex jurisdiction. And as we're all aware, obesity has become a serious public health concern. In particular, in suburban Cook County, 60% of our population is overweight or obese. And even though we know that there are rising rates of obesity and that they're a result largely of what we eat and how much we move, there are a very limited amount of healthcare dollars that go towards prevention. So, like I said, suburban Cook County is very diverse. The area covers a total of over 700 square miles and encompasses 125 municipalities with nearly 2.3 million people. And there are striking racial and ethnic health inequalities across the county. So the question we had to answer with this program was, how do we promote healthy living and health equity in such a complex jurisdiction? So I don't know how many of you are familiar with Communities Putting Prevention to Work, but in March of 2010, the Cook County Department of Public Health was awarded nearly $16 million to focus on obesity prevention, and the program is aimed at broad-based policy and environmental changes that should make healthy living easier. And then as part of that was something called the Model Communities Grant Program. So there are many complicated components to all of this, but I'm going to focus just on the Model Communities Grant Program. So the Model Communities Grant Program, or as I refer to it, the MCU program, was one component of CPPW, and it was designed as a grassroots, community-driven program to advance policy and change environments at the local level. And it really emphasized the importance of collaborations and reducing health inequities. So, like I said, there are three key themes to the program: policy and environmental change, reducing health inequities, and creating coalitions. There were 38 communities across suburban Cook County that were awarded funding. They were also provided technical assistance and trainings to advance their PSE change. They were really in three large areas. They were in breastfeeding, healthy schools, and healthy communities. And this is the theory of change that was created as part of the Model Communities Program. The individuals who developed it thought that they needed a theory to explain what they thought would happen. The approach was multi-pronged, and it incorporated three primary strategies: health communications messaging, which is on the left, which were aimed at the national and local and countywide levels to change social norms. Then in the middle is capacity building. They wanted to enhance the capacity of organizations and communities through trainings and technical assistance. And then on the far right is alliance strengthening to build networks across sectors. So for Our case study evaluation, we only focused on two of these three areas, the capacity building and alliance strengthening. The health communications piece was done by an outside agency and evaluated by them. So the objective of our case study was to provide an in-depth understanding of the facilitators and barriers that influence achievement of policy systems and environmental change goals by the model community organizations. We also aim to look at organizational capacity and alliances or collaborations. Our main evaluation question was, what are the perceived facilitators and barriers to CPPW-funded model community PSE goal achievement? I could probably do the whole presentation in acronyms, but I won't. So our methods, we used a multiple case study design. We looked at six model communities from the 38 participating across suburban Cook County. That sample was a purposive sample, and they were selected based on geographic regions. So we were trying to get, we had two communities from the north, south, east, and west, and then also based on funding level, and there was a readiness assessment done prior to the grant, so based on readiness level as well. We conducted semi-structured key informant interviews. In total, we did 97 interviews, but it was across three waves. And I did the majority of them, so I'm very tired. We also conducted a document review, so we looked at internal audits that the county had done of each of these six communities to look at what goals they said they would accomplish at the start of the grant, and then what actually happened. And then we did a process that we call arc mapping, which really just traced the processes from start to finish. Oh, I should mention, too, the grant was only 12 months. So this is just a table of our respondents. So we did three waves throughout the grant, at the start, middle, and then finish of the grant. The grant just finished in June of this year. And we tried to target for each wave of interviews two of the model community representatives from each of the six model communities, so that's 12, one to two of their technical assistance providers who are contracted to work with the model communities, and then one to two of the CPPW staff members, so the coordinators and managers of the programs. And then in the last wave, we just finished up, we decided that it would be important to talk to the CPPW leadership and support staff to really talk to them about the theory of change and how they had designed this entire program. So, like I said, we did three waves of interviews. They're all finished, and I'll say they're analyzed. We still have some work to do. We created unique interview guides for each wave and type of participant. So there were three different interview guides based on who we were interviewing. And then we used Atlas TI to code and analyze all the data. And there were three of us coding on the coding team, and we met regularly, like Amy said, to discuss code applications and anything we would like to change. And we calculated code recode reliability, which was 80% for all three waves. This is just a visual of our facilitators and barriers, and I'll talk about the sustainability piece on the right in a little bit. So we identified three facilitators of successful PSE change: technical assistance, strong organizational capacity, and formal and informal model community leadership. And then three barriers as well: time constraints, administrative delays, and policy-related challenges. So the first facilitator was technical assistance. Overwhelmingly, this was the most influential part of the entire program. The technical assistance providers helped the model communities set and achieve their goals. A lot of these communities came in and it was their first time even having a grant, and so they had lofty goals, and so the technical assistance really helped them to figure out what was feasible in a 12-month period and then keep them on track. They used, like it says here, they helped them stay on track using clear strategies and timelines. And this is just a quote that illustrates that. One model community representative said about her TA provider, "She's like a cheerleader for everything. She's so upbeat and so positive about everything. You feel like you can do anything when you sit down with her. They've basically been our technical assistants in every way." And just on that note, we're following up with sustainability of these initiatives, and a lot of the technical assistants are without pay, going to continue to do this work because they've really developed a strong relationship. Then the second facilitator is strong organizational capacity, and we found, I mean, not surprisingly, but model communities that had strong organizational capacity at the start of the grant period were better positioned to set their goals and achieve their goals. So those that had appropriate staffing with the right training and knowledge to do this type of work obviously were better off from the get-go. And this quote just illustrates that. One model community rep said, "This is a fine-honed operation that is working, that works well together, and we know how to interrelate. And we have a set process, and you follow the process. And it's in place because it works." Then the last facilitator was formal and informal model community leadership. We separated the two out because we found model communities that had formal leaders, so those with formal leadership positions, like for instance, a superintendent in a school that had actually, in a school district that had actually applied for the grant, someone that was bought, just completely bought into this, they were, that helped facilitate their goal achievement because it was someone who was committed and who could push policies through at the district level. And then informal leaders were people without formal leadership titles but were community volunteers, people that knew the community really, really well and were out there on a daily basis, like watering the school gardens, community gardens, and whatnot. And this is just a quote about that. I think leadership has a lot to do with that. She's talking about her success with the program. Because our main contact is the superintendent, which is great, and I don't think a lot of school districts have a superintendent 100% involved actively participating in the grant. In fact, this superintendent was out shoveling sidewalks and in the dead heat of summer watering the garden, so she was very, very involved. And then our three barriers. The first one is the short grant period. Really everyone mentioned the time constraints. That in the beginning, affected some of the administrative decisions by the CPPW leadership. So there were things that they had proposed to do with the entire program that just couldn't get done in a 12-month period. And then also when this was implemented, there was a very harsh winter in Chicago. So just thinking about community and school gardens and things like that, or installing bike racks in the community, when the ground's frozen, things like that don't happen. So they had to make adjustments based on the short grant period. So this is just a quote and says, "The limitation of this grant is the 1 year. It does not really extend itself to real sustainability. Most foundation grants are 2 years and then a lot of fellow grants are 3 to 5 years. So the idea of a 1 year grant to produce real change is, I just don't think it's something that does not lend itself to that because it's one time and then everybody disappears." And then the second barrier were administrative delays. These were due to bureaucratic procedures that slowed implementation. We really found this was a barrier in schools mostly, places where the superintendent or people weren't involved. It takes a lot of time to push policy change through. So they were up against school boards or village boards that just paperwork and all those administrative delays took a lot of time. So it slowed implementation. I think this quote's from a TA provider, and she was saying, "I think the biggest challenge is how long it takes to go through the official governing bodies." She's talking about a joint use agreement. The use agreement finally got adopted by the school board. It went to the village. They made a little change and put it back 3 months. That's the kind of thing that's just frustrating, but there's nothing you can do. That's just how it is. Then the last barrier is that the model communities experience what we are calling policy-related challenges. They really felt, A, that they didn't know what policies were, what policy enactment really looked like. Some had never done this type of work before. And then some were confused that that was even an expectation as an outcome of the grant. There was some miscommunication at the beginning as to what actually is a policy versus a program, especially in the schools who are so used to just doing programs. And some of the coordinators weren't clear from the very beginning that they were expected to do policy change. So this is just another quote. It says, "That is the hardest part, it really is. I didn't realize how hard it is to get a policy change. And as far as community-wide, we really haven't changed any policies because we just have more control over changing things in the district. And now we're starting to look, now that the grant is over and we have all this data, we're really starting to look at sustainability of these initiatives. We found that all six of the model communities in our sample, and I know of many, many more, that have initiated planning towards continuation of their current initiatives. A lot of them have worked with their TA providers to find additional funding. But the funding is really for things like continuing to buy seeds for the gardens, and then those that installed bike racks or put up signage, those things obviously will be maintained. We found that throughout the grant period, they had a lot of positive and hopeful attitudes from their successes, and that's motivating them to continue to do this work. So this is a model community rep again. We had all these goals and we had policy changes, but we need to make sure that we continue on this path. I don't want the grant to end, and I don't think it will. I think we're so committed to this that we'll continue working and collaborating even if there's not funding, and we'll still find ways to get the word out. So just in conclusion, we think that our data suggests that the model communities approach can be a successful one in addressing policy systems and environment change in a complex jurisdiction like suburban Cook County. We also think that planning and implementation of PSE change might be more successfully accomplished if you focus on the facilitators that I presented here and either avoiding or coping or just keeping in mind the barriers that I presented. So if you have another grant that's only 12 months, anticipate all those barriers. And then future directions for research. We are starting to look at, we've actually been extended a little bit to publish, and so we're starting to look at the degree of institutionalization and sustainability, like I said, of the PSE changes made during the grant. So which initiatives are just sort of there and in place, and then what communities are actually going to engage in future PSE change work, so take on new initiatives in this area. And then we also are trying to look at post-grant policy enactment, so what policies actually were enacted, and the environmental changes that were implemented with a focus on processes and the intermediate outcomes. So those are just my references and the acknowledgments. So, thank you.